It is Thursday, October 23rd, 2005. I am Zach Barnett, joined by my lovely colleagues, John Bryce, Doug Samuels. Scott Roussel is not with us today. As far as we know, his absence from today's podcast is not related to the FBI's investigation of the NBA. That's just as far as we know at this time. That could change by the time you hear this, but that's the latest information we have. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing well. That's a good intro.
Yeah, per sources.
Per source, yes. Excuse me. All right, I'd like to start with something John wrote about a topic unrelated to this weekend's games. I'm going to quote from Lane Kiffin. This was asked about the playoff, choosing the playoff, which we'll get going here. It's the first Tuesday in November. Quote, what would Vegas do? They're the best at what they do by far. Way better than any committee, way better than anybody could in a piece on top of footballscoop.com titled Lane Kiffin's Perfect College Football Playoff Plan. Let Vegas see the field. John, you wrote this. You wrote the headline. Defend this.
I will defend it only in that it's not the first time Lane has said that. It's pretty interesting that that's his plan. He didn't have a lot of details to his plan. It is pretty inarguable that Vegas does a lot better job than us. I don't know. Maybe I should have been tracking my picks all season long just by picking the Vegas favorite, and I might not be five games behind you, Zach. But the fact of the matter is it's the SEC already beginning its politicking. That's what it boils down to me, and it bothers me that the SEC is already launching into this. It was – precipitated on the SEC teleconference Wednesday by someone asking Lane. Actually, I think it was a Texas beat writer asking Lane if he sees any reason why there shouldn't be five or more SEC teams in the playoff field this year. And we're not there yet. We're not to December 7th or whatever it is. I think it is Sunday, December 7th, that we'll know the field. And there's no super teams in college football. There have been years in the past where the SEC certainly probably deserved more representatives than one or even two when it was a smaller field. But that's not the case right now. The SEC is not light years ahead of the rest of college football, and it's evidenced by the fact that the SEC hasn't won the national title in 3 years.
My argument against Lane, and Lane's not the first person to throw this argument out there and certainly not the last, is that Vegas is very good at what they do, but they're not infallible. Just last week, they had Texas Tech as a 10-point favorite at Arizona State. They lost outright. So they're good at what they do. They're not soothsayers. And if we let Vegas decide, at some point it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where we just – once the 24/7 talent composite comes out, well, those are the most talented teams, so therefore they're the best teams. And that's the total antithesis to why we play an entire season.
Well, let's not forget that Vegas last weekend had – Florida State favored by 18.5 points at Stanford, and had Nebraska, I think, favored by 8.5 points at Minnesota. And Nebraska was non-competitive. Forget that Nebraska didn't win the game. It was overall non-competitive, especially in the second half of that game. So I'm an SEC guy. I grew up on SEC football. I'm an SEC grad. The politicking already drives me nuts.
And finally, the Vegas views the University of Texas as a top 10 team right now, and they're going to have their hands full in Starkville, Mississippi this week, just like they had their hands full in Lexington, Kentucky last week. All right, that's enough of that. Let's move on. First game I have on my list to talk about is Ole Miss at Oklahoma, and I view this game as basically Ole Miss's season, in my opinion. Because where they were at and where they have coming in their November schedule, they had to win one at Georgia, at Oklahoma, and then avoid being upset in the back half of their schedule. Came close, didn't get the Georgia win. I think if they lose this, even at 10-2, I don't think they have the resume to get in. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. You look at their remaining schedule, this is a must-win game. They've got South Carolina, who's kind of reeling and – has no offensive identity to the point that students are marching in the streets asking for the offensive coordinator's job. Then you've got the Citadel, Florida, who's as we all know, reeling after the firing of Billy Napier, and then Mississippi State to close the schedule. And Mississippi State's a much improved team from where they were last year, enough to scare some SEC teams. But Ole Miss absolutely has to have this one to keep their playoff hopes alive, or all this talk from Lane Kiffin is just hot air.
Yeah, I won't go so far as to say this is an elimination game for the Rebels, because if they close the season at 10-2, we just got through talking about how we don't think there's necessarily any super teams in college football this year, certainly not any super teams in the SEC. We don't know what's going to happen. Texas A&M could lose this weekend. And so because of that, it's an incredibly important game. To me, it's the only way Ole Miss controls its destiny for the playoffs. But I don't consider it an elimination game. I just consider it, if they don't win, then they have to win out and get some help. But I also still believe that help is attainable for them, because I don't look at the SEC and see a team where I go, that team's definitely not losing the rest of the year. Like, probably won't, but I don't sit there and say definitely not.
So I dug this setup this week, and it applies to five games this week. SEC teams 2-6 on the back end of playing consecutive conference road games last season, and so far they're 0-3 in this scenario. So caveats to that, does not count neutral side games in there. Obviously, Texas and Oklahoma both went on the road last week after playing neutrals away from home and won. But teams playing back-to-back road games in the SEC this week: Texas A&M at LSU, Ole Miss at Oklahoma, Missouri at Vanderbilt, and allegedly the biggest game of the week, Tennessee at Kentucky, and Texas at Mississippi State. I was roundly mocked on this podcast for suggesting that Texas would lose at Kentucky or at Mississippi State.
Well, they didn't lose at Kentucky, bro.
They did not lose. They did not lose. But I would like some respect to be thrown on my name, because they absolutely should have lost, and they may very well lose at Mississippi State.
I should be retired. I'm not.
All right, let's stay in the SEC. I think Missouri is going to go on the road to Vanderbilt and win that game outright. I think Diego Pavia is a great college quarterback when he can involve his legs. I don't think he's a great dropback passer. Missouri has allowed 11 rushing yards total to Jalen Daniels, to Lenora Sellers, to Jackson Arnold, three very good running quarterbacks. Vanderbilt's rush defense looks good on paper. They have not played a good running team. I think Missouri gets Jaden Hardy loose. I think they bottled Diego Pavia up. I think they win the game. What do you guys think?
I think this game, the stat that popped out to me for this game is Missouri is number 4 in time of possession. And I know last week I told JB time of possession is the most overrated stat in all of college football. But when you've got Diego Pavia on the other side, in place for him, unlike the other three quarterbacks you said, like he is a spread triple option quarterback that is going to hurt you. But the one way to neutralize or minimize that is to keep the ball out of his hands. And Missouri is going to take that to the nth degree. I think that they average like holding the ball for 34 minutes or something like that. That's 34 minutes that are not in the hands. The ball is not in the hands of a Heisman hopeful like Diego Pavia. And I think that ends up being the difference.
You know, the way I assess the game is, can Vanderbilt control the legs of Bo Prabhula? And I think that's what this contest boils down to. Diego Pavia will make some plays. He may not have the consistent success that he had all day long in leading Vanderbilt to the win against LSU last weekend, or early in the first half against Alabama earlier this year. But I think Alabama is a better defense than Missouri. I think LSU is a very comparable defense to Missouri. And Diego Pavia had moderate to really good success against both of those defenses. So I think this game rides on Bo Prabhula. Like, he does not have a signature moment yet as Missouri's quarterback. He's been very nice. He certainly helped them come back last week at Auburn, and he did that as much with his legs, probably more so than his arms, and they're really good on the D-line. They've got the great running back. But I think the X factor in this game is Bo Prabhula. And if Vanderbilt can make Missouri win the game through its quarterback, then I like Vanderbilt's chances to win this game.
Mike Elko has busted down a lot of barriers done a lot of things not done since the mid-90s so far at Texas A&M. First 7-0 start since the mid-90s, first number three ranking since the mid-90s. Now he's trying to do another one and get A&M's first win in Baton Rouge since 1994. Obviously, they did went a long time without playing there, but A&M has not won at Tiger Stadium since joining the SEC. Is this the week they get it done?
No, I'm calling my shot. I think this is I think this is LSU saving its season, if not considerably more than its season, this weekend in Death Valley. And if I'm wrong, then it's a lot worse for the people in Death Valley than it is for me.
LSU has Alabama the week after this one. So if they don't win this one, they'll be waking up Sunday morning staring 5-4 after a 5-1 start right in the face. So how do you see the game playing out, John?
I like the LSU defense, and I think that A&M has been a little bit on borrowed time. Like, credit to the Aggies, you can only be 7-0 right now, and they're 7-0. But they should never have won at Notre Dame. Notre Dame handed that game away. Arkansas gave the Aggies all they wanted last week. I think, again, all credit to Texas A&M. They're absolutely right now a playoff team. But I think they're the most flawed of the undefeated top five teams in the country.
I think of those teams you just named, though, JB, you've got some pretty strong offensive coordinators, offensive star players, and LSU does not have that. LSU is really struggling identity-wise to figure out who they are offensively. Brian Kelly's going to have to answer for the offense, I think, after this game once again.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right, Doug. And Brian Kelly's background is as an offensive coach. And so you went into this season with chatter about Joe Sloan being the next head coach, the next offensive coordinator to head coach guy. And it's been a season-long slog. I mean, every week it's like the LSU offense is playing in a pot of gumbo. But if this game was at College Station, I would have A&M winning by 10 points. But the fact that it's in Death Valley, I believe there's enough magic there for LSU to get one win that kind of not defines its season, because it's not been a good enough season to have that be the case. But I think it's one game, one weekend where LSU has enough to salvage its season. And to me, that's this game, because I don't see LSU going on the road and winning at Alabama.
Kentucky has beaten Tennessee three times in the last 40-ish years. Is this number four?
I don't think so. And here's why. The Bush Hamden experience is worse than any carnival ride. I don't care if you're getting on the tilt-a-whirl and you realize that none of the bolts are screwed in. This Bush Hamden experience is worse, and I'll give you the stat that tells you why. He's now been offensive coordinator, I think, in about 20 games for the Wildcats. And in those 20 games, never has his offense against a power conference foe scored more than two touchdowns. Never. Never. Not against Louisville, not against any SEC team, not against anyone. Now, we know other than Louisville that there's no other power conference teams in Kentucky's non-conference, because they couldn't win the MAC East if that was the case. So he's had some games where he's had three or four touchdowns against the MAC, but he does not have a game where his offense has had more than two touchdowns against any power conference opponent. This is Tim Banks' worst defense at Tennessee. It's got a lot of flaws, but I think the X factor is Joey Aguilar, and you have to wonder what Kentucky has left after leaving everything on its field last week against Texas.
Yeah, if Kentucky was going to upset an orange and white team at home, it's hard to imagine doing it, coming closer than what they did against Texas. You got a first and goal from the four to open overtime, a third and goal from the one. You run straight up the middle on third and one, gain nothing. And then do the exact same thing on fourth and one when you're playing a Texas offense that can't play its way out of a paper bag. You need 1 yard and two plays to probably seal the game. You couldn't get it done.
And this is another elimination game. Like Tennessee either keeps alive its hopes of a return trip to the CFP, because it's still got Vanderbilt lurking at the end of its schedule, as well as a trip to Florida, or the Vols are eliminated if they lose this game.
Absolutely. So the big noon game this week is the hottest team in college football taking on number two Indiana. In part due to their late rise, in part due to lack of options, UCLA is in the biggest TV window of the weekend. Is this the weekend that the magic stops in Westwood?
Yeah, I think so. I think Kurt Cignetti earlier this week, I think it was on Monday, was talking about UCLA is not a 3-4 team. They're a 3-0 team right now. And that's the way they've been playing under interim head coach Tim Skipper, not Jerry Neuheisel. Jerry Neuheisel has done a great job with the offense. Kevin Coyle came in as and has helped revamp the defense. But Indiana's got a laser focus. I feel like they don't care about anything that doesn't have to do with winning. That's how their players described the past two seasons, or season and a half now since Coach Sig has gotten there. And I don't see that stopping at the hands of UCLA this weekend.
I completely agree, especially with Bryant Haynes' defense. I just don't see it happening. I do think that I appreciate how pointed you are in driving home that this is Tim Skipper's team. And for all the hoopla about Jerry Neuheisel, because he is a Bruin and he does have this remarkable story, it kind of gets overlooked. I expect Tim Skipper to be a candidate, a very strong candidate for some of these jobs that are opening this cycle, since UCLA is very determined to open it up and have a full surge. Unless somehow UCLA goes from 0-4 to 8-4, then the search is over right then and there, if it's a truly storybook close to the season for the Bruins. But otherwise, I think Tim Skipper is going to be a factor, especially as some of these nice G5 jobs open, because some guys get some power conference jobs. Watch Tim Skipper.
Doug, how do you see Michigan at Michigan State? Or is it in the Ann Arbor? I have it written down. Michigan at Michigan State, yes. How do you see that one playing out?
Man, I don't see this going well for the Spartans. I think Michigan has just come in and they're gonna be hungrier. They want to get their season back on track. And meanwhile, I just feel like Michigan State is falling apart at the seams. Jonathan Smith hasn't done a great job since arriving in East Lansing of connecting with high school coaches. That reputation also took a hit when whether it was the Big Ten's decision or Michigan State's decision, they decided to – the high school state finals are typically on a Friday and Saturday. Well, they decided to play Saturday and kick the high school state finals to Sunday. So now you're split between Friday and Sunday for state finals, and people traveling from all over the state. That has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And I think Alan Haller, before he was dismissed, tried to make that right. And I think Jonathan Smith is now catching a lot of heat from high school coaches across the state for that decision. Right or wrong, that's where things are, and he just hasn't done enough to win over high school coaches, fans of the Spartans, and then, you know, the comments we've talked about from quarterback Aiden Childs over the last couple of weeks that he doesn't care what the fans think. It just seems like a smoldering fire in East Lansing.
Yeah, and Michigan is favored by 14.5, and let's remember that this Michigan team oftentimes struggles to score 14-plus points. So that gives you an idea of what Vegas, Lane Kiffin's favorite place, gives you an idea of what Vegas thinks of this contest. I'll say this, if Jonathan Smith is ever going to make a stand in East Lansing and have a chance to save his job and turn it around, then it has to happen this weekend. And a win against Michigan on its own would not be enough, but it's the only way to try and stem the tide and turn it around. Otherwise, that's a situation that continues to deteriorate and will lead to a coaching change sooner rather than later.
Doug, do you think, say Michigan wins this game by 17 points, and do you think that there's conversations to be had internally about Jonathan Smith and Michigan State mutually hitting the ripcord, especially with Oregon State open?
Yeah, I don't know enough about Jonathan Smith to say that's something he would be open to. I think there's a lot to be said about someone that came from, you know, the West Coast or the, you know, Pacific Northwest to come to Michigan, and maybe he just wants to hit reset and kind of get back to his roots. But he was kind of a fish out of water when he arrived in East Lansing. I think a lot of people had high expectations because he was a pro style offense guy, because of the success he had with DJ Ugalungale. I'm sure I butchered that, but Johnson Smith got more out of DJ than arguably anyone else. He, you know, fell on his face at Clemson, really struggled at Florida State. So there was a lot of hope, and I just don't think that really hasn't shown in the results category whatsoever in any way, shape, or form.
Last Big Ten game I have on my list is Illinois at Washington. I think we all agree it's hard to go on the road and win at Washington unless you're Ohio State. Illinois enters this game 5-2. Their only ranked win was USC, who's no longer ranked. After this, they get Rutgers, Maryland, at Wisconsin, and home against Northwestern. The real chance we could have a 10-2 Illinois team with Brett Bielema in dueling with Lane Kiffin in the press for the final college football playoff spot if Illinois wins this one.
Yeah, and I thought Washington would show more last week at Michigan. I picked Michigan to win that game, but I thought Washington would be a bit more competitive. Jed Fish, we discussed it in our Football Scoop Slack channel this week, was asked about vacancies around the country and gave maybe the most quintessential non-answer that any of us has ever seen. Jed Fish wants the Florida job. Will the Florida job get to Jed Fish? I don't know, but he's got no shot at it if he doesn't win some games like this.
For those listeners that aren't familiar, each Thursday I publish On the Line, just kind of setting the stage for what the stakes are this weekend. Two games that I think have a lot of stakes that maybe aren't headliner games: South Florida at Memphis. You have South Florida, the clear favorite to get the G5 playoff bid right now, coming in ranked 18th. This was going to be a ranked versus ranked game until Memphis went and lost to UAB. They had a 10-game winning streak, was the second longest in college football to Ohio State until Alex Mortensen snapped it. And now Memphis at home as an underdog against USF could go from in the AP top 25 to basically out of the race, and its season, its championship goal is effectively over with two straight losses.
Yeah, and this is an elimination game for either team, both for Alex Golish's Bulls and for Ryan Silverfield's Tigers. Golish's Bulls have a little bit more friendly runway after this game if they can get a win, whereas Memphis still has to host Tulane in a couple of weeks and also has to host Navy to end the regular season. And so there's still a lot out there for the Tigers, but if they don't win this one, then a dream season starts to cascade into the shallow pool. And it also, Ryan Silverfield before last week, I think was 27-5 in his last 32 games. And now, right now, he's just trying to get out from under the cloud of losing to UAB, an interim coach who had never been a head coach, and then also losing to UAB for the first time in 14 years.
Yeah, I think Alex Golish isn't getting enough credit. I know when we talked about the Florida job on Tuesday, he might have – I'm not sure we mentioned him. We might have briefly mentioned him. But if you look at what Florida – when Florida's had success under the past two regimes, right, it's been Steve Spurrier, innovative offensive guy. Urban Meyer, innovative offensive guy, right? Alex Golish comes from that deep choice family of Josh Heupel, and you know, with the talent base that Florida has, just in the immediate hour or two surrounding Gainesville, could do some real damage as an innovative offensive guy as well. Now, is he cut out for the SEC? You could make an argument either way, but when I think past success can tell a lot about future success. So if you can go back and look at the Spurriers and the Urban Meyers, I think Alex Golish is absolutely in that mold on the front edge of offensive innovation. Alex Golish is absolutely that guy.
Yeah, and he's got the work that he did at Iowa State as well as UCF before Tennessee. Tennessee's offense, trust me, I hear it from my Vols fans all the time, especially after Alabama last weekend. It's not the same with Joy Halsey as the trigger man versus Alex Golish as the trigger man. I think also Josh Heupel probably trusted Alex Golish just a little bit more. And that's not a knock on Joy. Joy's earning that trust. It takes time. But, yeah, you're right, Doug. Like, Golish is that guy, and I'd be stunned if Alex Golish isn't a Power Conference head coach next year.
Another game in that noon window, this one's going to air on TNT, is the Sunflower Showdown with K-State at Kansas. And you have a unique set of pressures on both of these head coaches. For K-State, you've won 16 in a row against your in-state rival. They're 28-4 against Kansas going back to 1993. The last time Kansas State lost to Kansas, they fired Ron Prince 4 days later. Not suggesting that's going to happen to Chris Klieman. A lot of reason why they fired Ron Prince is because they had Bill Snyder waiting in the wings, ready to return. Obviously, he returned, never lost to Kansas ever again. So if you're Chris Klieman, you don't want to share real estate in your fans' heads with Ron Prince in any way, shape, or form. On the other hand, Kansas is favored in this game. Kansas is at home. Lance Leipold is 0-4 in this game. You hired him to beat your in-state rival at least once every half decade. The loser of this game will be 2-3 in the Big 12 with really nothing to play for at this point in the season. Whoever loses this game is going to really be feeling it, and that's part of what I love about college football. That makes me sicko, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if K-State loses it, it's five losses before the calendar flips to November, and if Kansas loses it, it would be a fourth loss, and it would be your last best chance to beat your arch nemesis, because you're not going to have Jalen Daniels back next year. He enters this game with an 18-2 touchdown to INT ratio. As you noted, they've got it at the booth, and it's now or never for Kansas.
Go ahead, Doug.
For Chris Klieman, I mean, had a great run at North Dakota State, you know, kept the train on its tracks and won some national titles. He did go 4-6, I think, in that 2020 COVID year at Kansas State. But the last time he was in a situation, you know, like this, win-loss record-wise, was 2005 when he was a Division III head coach for a season at Loras. So it's uncharted territory for him as well. Two guys that have won a ton of football games and are really good football coaches, that their record says otherwise right now.
There have been a lot of facts and opinions spit on this podcast. Nothing will top what you just delivered, Doug. That's funny. You just went into the Wayback Machine 2 decades ago to D3 to drop knowledge.
Absolutely. Speaking of sickos, also in that noon window, the Auburn offense is going to take the field against the Arkansas defense. And we're told one of these teams is going to win this game.
Yeah, I don't know what the over is in that game. I haven't looked at it, but I would take the over. Bobby Petrino has had the offense absolutely rolling since he took the reins, and I don't see any sign of it slowing down. Meanwhile, Hugh Freeze has struggled on the offensive side of things, and the defense has kept him in games, but I'd still take the over.
The over is 56.5. So I don't know. I don't know if I would take that over. I am, however, taking Arkansas, I think, to win this game. It's no secret Bobby Petrino covets the Arkansas job full time. Right now, as someone from Arkansas put it to me this week, he's doing the same thing Sam did. We're just losing close games. So if Bobby Petrino is ever going to make a statement about why Arkansas should just keep its search turned inward, it has to start by winning some of these games. There are some winnable games for the Hogs down the stretch. It has to start right here. And if it starts right here, then do we see another bloody Sunday in the SEC?
One team that I think has the most to gain from a win this weekend is Houston. There's five teams in the Big 12 that are undefeated or have one loss in conference play. And Houston, four wins a year ago, is among them. They're at Arizona State. Arizona State's the Big 12, defending Big 12 champions. They're 9-1 in their last 10 Big 12 games. I like Arizona State to win this game, but from Saturday morning to Sunday morning, the biggest stock opportunity in this for any team is the Houston Cougars.
Well, and it keeps Houston not only in the conference championship race, but then therefore in the college football playoff race. Willie Fritz not probably being talked about enough this year for doing one of the best jobs of turning around a program and doing so in his image, but also in short order. And this would be as much as a signature win as he could claim at this point in time.
So it's a common phrase this season that there are no super teams in college football. I think Ohio State might have something to say about that in time, but I want to amend that statement. There are no super teams at the FBS level. We're seeing two super teams at the levels below FBS, and both of them have important games this weekend, starting with number one defending FCS national champion, North Dakota State. They're on the road at number two, South Dakota State. The last time South Dakota State lost a game to a team other than North Dakota State was 2021. These teams have won the last four national championships. They played for every FCS national championship but one since 2011. And, of course, everyone in North Dakota is saying, well, yeah, but North Dakota State is most of those, and that's true. This year's Bison team might be unbeatable. They are number one in total defense in the FCS, number one in scoring defense, while also being number four in total offense and number six in scoring. They are what the kids call a wagon.
These two teams, when we were picking this game for Pick'em this week, you pull up the stats and you would expect to see North Dakota State just absolutely pounding the ball and you know, looming over big time everyone else in the league. And actually, South Dakota State has a rusher with 100 yards over the Bison's leading rusher. The Bison's quarterback has thrown for more yards than South Dakota State quarterback. And the leading receiver in this game is from North Dakota State. So that just goes to show how evenly matched these two teams are. It's an absolute crime that this isn't on anything other than ESPNU, whatever the heck that is.
If it was up to me, this game would be on ABC.
Yeah, it's better than being on ESPN, the Ocho. But, it's not great. It's interesting to note South Dakota State nearly had its breakthrough in this series last year. Lost the regular season matchup 13-9. Lost in the playoffs 28-21. That playoff game was honestly about the de facto national championship game. But South Dakota State had Mark Gronowski last year and does not this year. Gronowski, of course, triggering the offense for Iowa. So going to be a tough, tall task for the Jackrabbits, but they are at home.
Cole Payton is North Dakota State's quarterback. He leads the FCS in passing efficiency by a mile. 74% passing, nearly 13 yards per attempt, as Doug mentioned, 11 touchdowns, only one pick. Part of the reason why he leads – why he's so efficient is he's only had to throw 121 passes through seven games. North Dakota State runs the ball down people's throats. They have it trailed for 1 second in the second half this season. So they've spent half of their season just effectively on cruise control. So we'll see if South Dakota State can drag them into some deep water, although we know North Dakota State can swim quite well. The other game that I want to mention, I called for game day to go to this location back in May, sensing that this was a light week at the FBS level, excuse me. This game is not quite living up to the hype that we all hoped because Grand Valley State took it on the chin last week against Saginaw Valley State. But the number one defending national champion, Ferris State Bulldogs, do host Grand Valley State. Bill Connolly of ESPN has Ferris State ahead of, 13, I think, FBS teams in his S&P Plus. Ferris State had ran off 208 unanswered points over a 3+ game stretch. This team is absolutely dominant. And I wish the country was celebrating them this weekend instead of going to another SEC game.
Yeah, Grand Valley losing the Battle of the Valleys last week, 20-19 to Saginaw Valley, and Ryan Brady at Saginaw Valley is a branch of the wide and strong Tony Anise coaching tree. So they found a way to get it done and kind of spoil what this could have been. Could have been a top five matchup between the defending national champs and Grand Valley, who's got a really rich tradition. Ferris State's defense right now is playing arguably as good as anyone in the country. They gave up 34 points in their season opener to a tough Tiffin squad in their games after that. Now, not great opponents in some of these cases. 76-0, 66-0, 59-0. And then against Michigan Tech was a disappointing 38-10. So they've allowed 10 points since week two. Their defense is outstanding. Ryan Hodges is one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, is always in the running for the Division II coordinator of the year. He's never at the clinic to collect his award because he's busy back on campus getting kids settled into you know, their winter schedules and things like that. Does a lot for that program and has one of the top defenses in all of college football.
I agreed with you, Zach, that it should have been somewhere other than Nashville this weekend. So kudos to you for signaling that out months ago. And then once again, like Doug dropping so much knowledge, I feel like I shouldn't even be on the podcast today.
Absolute nonsense. It is 10:38 Central Time. As far as we know, Scott Roussel still has no connection to the FBI's investigation into the NBA, but we will keep you posted if that changes.
Is Roussel an Italian name? Because I'm reading now that La Cosa Nostra is involved in this gambling schedule. So gambling scandal. So very interesting. I don't know if Roussel is French or Italian. Maybe for this pod, we'll call it Rousselli, and it will be Italian, and we'll wonder about a connection to La Cosa Nostra.
All right, that's it for us. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. We'll be back Sunday to wrap up all the action. Peace.